Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian. This is Insight Podcast number 219, recording this on Monday, the 16th of July, 2012. We're just the two of us, myself, Steve Litchfield, and Mr. Rafe Lanford.
Hello, everybody. Great to be here.
We're going to make this one fairly short and snappy. The Symbian world, there's still plenty to write about and talk about and to even to review, which may surprise people from a year ago. They thought, what, mid-2012, All About Symbian, still going, and they'd have feigned surprise and shock. But we're still here, aren't we, Rafe?
Indeed there is, Steve. We've been having quite a lot of content on the site. A lot of it's been down to the 808 recently. But one of the things I think that surprised most people is just how much momentum Symbian still has. Now, admittedly, I think things have got quieter and will get quieter as we move into the latter half of the year and then into 2013. But we're still finding a lot of people commenting on the stories. We're still finding developers, you know, sending us email about new applications. And certainly we still get a lot of questions coming in about devices. So while that's still happening, while there's demand, while you're still visiting All About Symbian, we'll be continuing to create content for you. And that podcast, or this podcast, is just one example of it. Talking of the 808, I know, Steve, you've been doing some DIY. I have to say, DIY and you and 808 all in the same sentence does make me slightly nervous. So what have you been up to?
Well, I've just been taking a photograph of the 808 next to my Black & Decker drill. Which the problem is that the hard case, which Nokia sell for the 808 PureView, and we'll put the link in the show notes to the actual product. It's all very well, and it covers the back of the phone. It's beautifully grippy, and it fits perfectly. And there's a removable flap that covers the camera lens and protects it. And you keep that on most of the time, just like on the old Nokia N93. And it's tethered, so it doesn't fall off and get lost. But it also covers up speaker aperture, which means that if you use your speaker a lot on your phone, I listen to a lot of podcasts on my 808. And also, of course, the phone, when the phone rings, you've got the phone ringtones as well. And all of that gets horribly, horribly muffled. So I've taken my drill and a suitable file and a craft knife, and I've cut a handy little aperture in Nokia's nice hard case. And now I can hear my music and my podcast perfectly. If this all sounds like a horrible hardware kludge, and it is, let's face it, I'll put some photos up on the site tomorrow, or probably today as you listen to this podcast, and you can see what a mess I've made of my hard case. But it works absolutely perfectly, and I can't for the life of me think why Nokia didn't just drill a nice, neat series of holes like they did in the end of the Lumia 800, Ray. You know, beautifully machined holes that kind of keep the dust out, but also let the sound through. It seems to be a bit of a design defect.
And this is actually in the case rather than the 808 that you've been drilling holes, isn't it?
It is. It
just so it's my... slightly less horrifying than people might think when Steve says 808 and drill parts. I mean, this is actually a problem you get on quite a few cases these days if someone doesn't get the cutout quite right. Most of the time, you know, all the buttons are fine, but speakers sometimes seem to be forgotten, or, you know, the cutout isn't quite big enough. And I noticed this actually when there were a couple of 808s doing the demo rounds. They were sitting in these cases and the sound was a bit muffled, which is a shame because it's a pretty decent loudspeaker. And also, of course, because of the rich recording on the 808, the sound playback, if you're doing it off a captured video, is pretty decent, and you will notice the difference. A lot of the time, you know, smartphone video and audio capture is not good enough to really be that big a deal, but it seems a shame, particularly on the 808, I think.
Yeah. Well, my continuing 808 review has been up on the site. I'm sure most listeners to this podcast have been seeing it and watching it and reading it. Up to now, quote, part three, which is actually, I think, part six, if you count all the subparts for the camera review. Like, the most contentious part in the most recent Rafe, was about performance. Now, generally, I would say the performance in the 808 of everything is pretty excellent. The speed of the interface with that 1.3 gigahertz processor, the masses of RAM, it's 300 megabytes free RAM after booting, which is just stonking, really, compared to what we've had in the past. The whole interface really flies around. The biggest sticking points or anything whatsoever to do with rendering HTML. So you've got, for example, the Nokia social networking, you've got the Nokia store itself. Both of those you can kind of forgive. The Nokia social networking, you just forget, and you put on Gravity or Tweetin or Twimgo or a third-party Facebook client of your choice. The Nokia store you just live with. You don't spend your entire life in the Nokia store. The web browser. Now, here's the contentious point, Rafe. I reckon web is not as bad as people are making out. It doesn't make the entire phone unusable, and that most people don't actually browse full desktop sites on their web browser on a Nokia 808. Would you agree or disagree?
Well, I would say it has to depend on the user, because I actually do quite a bit of browsing on my phone. But the point you also made in that same article was there are more and more mobile sites out there which make it perfectly acceptable. So I'd sort of add the caveat, it really depends on what you're expecting to do with the browsing experience. If you're going after full sites, yes, it isn't very good. And honestly, that's been the truth on Symbian for a very long time. I mean, in one sense, Nokia innovated very early on. It was one of the very first to have the WebKit, the open source based browser, but it didn't really keep up with that development. About 2 years ago, they started releasing updates, which started getting it back towards the top. But I think probably at this point in time, it's being a little bit constrained by some of the resources on board. And here I'm talking about the processor and the RAM. There is also some stuff in the software as well. It's not just about RAM and processor. It sort of depends on the site you're looking at. Because if you keep things relatively small on the sites, it's lightning quick and you really won't see much difference. I'm talking about mobile sites here. You'll see, the bottlenecks will be in the connection speed or the, quality of the network, something like that. So I think you probably gave it a slightly too easier pass here, because in all of these things, it depends on what, the person wants to use the device for. And, people say, oh, but Symbian devices aren't designed to do that. That's fair enough in one sense, but actually, the device that the 808 is in competition with is decided by the user. So people are going to be looking at a device, particularly with the 808, that's pretty expensive and are probably going to measure it up against something like the Galaxy S3 or the iPhone. And honestly, the web browsing experience on those devices is better. But I'm also with you in that I actually don't see web browsing as a primary thing I do on my phone. It's more about little bits of information retrieval or sometimes specific websites. So like a news website I might read for a few minutes on the train, or if I'm doing a Google search when I'm out and about for something specific. And quite a lot of the time, the mobile web has come so far in the last few years that, being served up a mobile website is not at all unusual, or at least the website will be somewhat optimized for mobile. I mean, there are still these giant sites out there that don't do very well. So I can sort of see both sides of the debate, but in one sense, I kind of feel like it's not good enough saying, oh, but I don't really do it. I'd like, if you were able to do it, you might be doing it more. Is that maybe sort of too much sitting on the fence, Steve?
We're very good at sitting on the fence in this podcast. No, that's fine. One point I would make is that, of course, web is basically hampered by the fact that as fast as web improves in terms of the rendering code, in terms of the core engine, and as fast as the photo processors get faster, as fast as Nokia add RAM to these devices, the web itself is not a stationary target. The web pages get progressively more and more bloated with more and more interactive features, more JavaScript, more plugins, more everything. So what used to be, say, a year or two ago, a full, rich desktop design web page might be a megabyte. You've now got a full, rich desktop design site. There's now 5 megabytes per page. And the poor web's thinking, well, hang on a minute. I'm fast enough to do what I was designed to do 2 years ago. But I think the improvements in RAM and processor and rendering speed just can't quite keep up with the pace of development on the desktop web itself.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that that's fair in one sense, but it's not good enough in that you should really look forward and see what's coming. And you're actually writing one of the big problems is JavaScript. And actually, it's been JavaScript performance on Symbian, which has let it down on some of the bigger sites and some of the kind of HTML5 web apps and things like that. I mean, that is kind of a known quantity, so it isn't really a surprise for the 808 in one sense. But, it is probably one of the things that Symbian gets, tarred with most frequently. I say you have to set it off against everything else that's on there. Honestly, it's not going to change people's minds, the 808, in terms of those who don't like Symbian. The question for existing users is, is the existing browsing experience good enough? You'll get a bit faster performance with the 808, but nothing really, really dramatic. And if it's good enough as it is now, you'll probably be quite happy.
Yeah.
If you're looking for, something better, you'll probably want to, give it a serious thought before buying an 808 and, locking yourself in for 2 years or however long it's going to be. I mean, speaking personally, I these days, use it when I'm out and about. That's when I'm really mobile, walking down the high street. I need to look something up. Maybe I'm in a bookshop and sort of doing the kind of worst nightmare of these bricks and mortar stores, looking up the price of something on Amazon and even sometimes ordering it. But I don't sort of sit down for prolonged browsing sessions. I do that sometimes at home and I don't want to use a computer, but I actually tend to use a tablet device for that, simply because of the limitations of the physical screen size. You know, it's also, I think, worth mentioning resolution very briefly here. I think web is one of the few applications where you really do notice the difference in resolution in terms of the utility of the experience. And that's because, you know, when you've got the high resolution, you can kind of fit more onto the screen in a zoomed out mode and have it nice and clear than you can with the lower resolution. So it is, you know, that kind of reading experience is one of the places where I do think that, you know, that relatively low resolution of the Symbian devices probably counts against it. In a lot of other areas, I think it's fairly irrelevant because, you know, it's not that, like, you can pack more information onto the screen in a useful way. Maybe in media playback, but even then, you know, the pixel densities that we're talking about, you know, compared to what we had with QVGA screens or something like that, you know, I think people, you know, obviously if you put them side by side, you'll notice the difference and you'll say that's better than that. But in terms of does it make a big difference to the overall experience, you know, if you're not, you know, being a geek and having several devices on the go, I don't know. Certainly in web, I think it's a factor. Elsewhere, maybe not.
Yeah. Well, one area I was concentrating on in terms of performance was actually acknowledging the fact that with this dedicated imaging, the GPU on the 808, if you think about JPEG images generally, I mean, on my desktop computer, I know that if I open, for example, two or three 12 megapixel images from the N8, and that's basically most of the RAM gone on my desktop computer and my image editor, working with JPEG images, which are heavily compressed pictures of any resolution, is incredibly memory intensive. And on the 808, you can open up a 38 megapixel image in under 2 seconds and zoom right into it in under another couple of seconds. That is just incredible performance from a device with a 1.3 gigahertz processor and only 300 megabytes free RAM. I think Nokia have done a staggering job with that GPU. There are a few glitches, and various people have noted in the comments, but just a couple of minor tweaks here and there that Nokia need to do. But on the whole, I think the performance is not just the optics of the sensor and the physical lenses in the 808 that's impressive. It's this GPU and all the custom electronics and custom firmware and custom work they've done on that GPU is really, really impressive.
Absolutely. And what this tells you is how important kind of custom software and custom chipsets on the SoC, that's the system on a chip, you know, inside a phone. You've got a whole bunch of, you know, chips going on. And as a whole, it's referred to as system on a chip, is really important when looking at performance. You can't just look at the, you know, speed of the central processing unit, you know, which is the thing that tends to get quoted in specifications, or people talk about quad core and a certain number of gigahertz. I think this is one of the best illustrations of how it's actually the complete picture you need to look at. And part of this is about having that GPU. You're absolutely right. You know, Nokia quite proudly say that it can deal with a billion pixels per second. That's when it's, you know, shooting 1080p video, for example. But it, you know, does have a big impact on playback and viewing images as well. But it's also about doing clever things in the software. The 808, for example, like pretty much all the recent Symbian phones, actually has Scalado technology, a company that Nokia recently acquired, built into it. One of the things it does is effectively does some processing as you create the JPEG, and this is obviously capturing from the camera, and putting, if you like, shortcuts in that can then enable it to decode JPEGs very quickly and then manipulate them, you know, be that zooming in or doing some cropping. And, you know, that kind of technology that's mainly software based, and there is obviously a hardware component as well, actually is really critical to creating a user experience that's, you know, seamless, fast, and, you know, pleasurable to use. And is it going to be interesting to see how well Nokia can translate that to Windows Phone, you know, when it comes inevitably out with a PureView Windows Phone device? Because, you know, it's not going to have quite the same level of control in terms of the software and the operating system that it did with Symbian. You know, I think I have every confidence they're doing it, and it's probably one of the things they're working closely with Microsoft on. But, you know, Symbian is incredibly efficient in this sense. And, you know, it's not just the 808 that's done this. You know, if you think back to N96, for example, which was a dog of a handset in many ways, it was actually able to do some pretty impressive things in terms of decoding DVB-H video, that's kind of mobile TV, on a relatively low processor, you know, the core family, at least, of it as such, without using too much power. And the same applies to the 808 here. You know, there's kind of two approaches when you're doing things on smartphones. You can throw lots of kind of memory and processor at it, or you can use software to kind of optimize things and then use custom electronics. And so, you know, certain things on the smartphone are always done with custom electronics, you know, like the digital signal processor for audio. And we've seen increasingly graphics code processors come in. You know, Nokia innovated in that area and then kind of dropped them. But pretty much every high-end smartphone now has a, you know, a code processor to handle graphics, you know, much like PCs do. And I do wonder whether we might see more of that in the future, as there's kind of this, you know, how do you solve this resource stroke power equation in smartphones? And the 808 is obviously a great example of how you can do this when you've got, you know, staggering graphics performance, you know, having to deal with this high-end camera that's, you know, just throwing loads and loads of pixels at you.
Yeah. The big question I think that everyone keeps asking me, and this is something I'll come back to in part four of the review coming soon, but is, if you've got a Nokia N8, do you upgrade the 808? And the big thing in people's minds will be the camera. So is the camera worth upgrading for? Yes, the camera is special. Yes, the camera has some unique tricks. Yes, the camera is incredible quality. Having said that, the N8 was pretty good. And I still come back to the fact that if you've got an N8, you don't upgrade the 808 purely for the camera, although that is a big part of it. The reason you upgrade and the reason why the 808 should be every Symbian fan's device they have and they keep and they hold on to forever and never let go of it is the fact it's the whole package. It's the processor, it's the RAM, it's this clear black display, larger screen. it's the build materials, it's the removable battery, and so on and so forth. It's the video light as well as the xenon flash, which itself is twice the brightness. If you add all of those items up, and I know I'm sounding rather gushing, but what becomes a simple 808 from the N8, yes, it's a bit of a camera upgrade, now becomes an absolute slam dunk. Every N8 owner should hang on to their N8 because that's a great backup device, but they should actually budget for going out and get an 808 because they won't regret it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I've described the 808 as the best Symbian device, full stop. And I think, you know, if there's one Symbian device, you know, you kind of want to own in the next few years, you know, the 808 is the ultimate one. Equally, well, I accept that, you know, some people are going to go, I'm not willing to have that, you know, camera hump on the back. I'd actually say personally, I don't think it's that big a deal. And equally, there's people are going to say, no, I don't want to get another Symbian device. I want to move on to something else and be that Windows phone, and staying with Nokia, you know, maybe an Android device. I think those are probably the two most likely options. I guess some people might go iPhone as well, but I kind of expect people who have done that would have already gone. But, you know, there is going to be a big constituency of people who want another Symbian device because that's what they're familiar with and they like, you know, the options that come with it, and particularly around battery life, you know, particularly around the quality of the hardware and the kind of the approach that's taken in the user experience. And it's perfectly valid to do that. I mean, you know, for example, we recently posted a user story on the site, which was asking someone to look at moving from a Symbian device to Windows Phone. And they actually said, you know, yes, basically, they'd do it. But they sort of noted a couple of caveats, and they said, you know, for example, Windows Phone basically needs a data connection to be truly effective. In one sense, the same is true of Symbian when you're doing certain things. But I think it has a whole bunch more functionality in the core of it that is, you know, not so dependent upon having a data connection. And it's factors like that which will keep people on Symbian, you know, for some time to come. It'll be really interesting to see what the response is when Windows Phone 8 comes out, simply because I think that fills in a lot of the holes that, you know, Symbian users are complaining about at the moment. You know, it's things like, you know, USB mass storage, as well as some of the other kind of Nokia functionality. I would expect to see FM transmitters come back in, you know, better Bluetooth, NFC, you know, those bits which maybe aren't, you know, core to the experience, but people like to have because it, you know, adds that extra feeling of value. Because at the moment, the Lumia devices feel like, you know, they don't quite represent the same hardware value as the Symbian devices. So, you know, it'll be really interesting to see what happens then. But even with that, I still think there will be some people who will say, no, I want to stick with Symbian for a little while. And that's who I think the 808 is ideal for. And I think it's a perfectly defensible position. I've got people who are saying to me, you must be mad recommending people to get another Symbian device. Well, I think there's two big groups who are interested in the 808. Those who want the ultimate camera phone, and they will upgrade from the N8 just for the 808 camera, because the differences they'll see, they are apparent, and they'll get the most out of them, particularly if you're a professional photographer or, you know, an amateur who's, you know, really into that kind of thing. And the other group of people is, you know, Symbian users who just want to get you know, the latest and greatest Symbian device. And in the back of their minds, sure, make sure they know it's the last one, and that has an implication for kind of the ecosystem bits with regard to apps and all of that. You know, think about where you'll be in 2 years. But if you're perfectly happy, you know, don't let anyone tell you that it's not a valid choice.
And I don't really apologize for making gushing sounds every time I talk about the 808 in the podcast. It's kind of a sign of how strongly I feel about it, and that backing up everything you've just said is that it engenders passion. If you, I think Matt, our good friend Matt Miller over on ZDNet over in America, he posted his review of the 808, and there were a few negatives there towards the user interface and so forth, and the amount of amount of passion that came out in the comments, both on his original story and on our reporting of his story on All About Symbian, was quite impressive, really. I think the Symbian has always engendered passion, and the 808 just amplifies that. So one of my contacts, I think Salim Fardley over on my Google Plus account, he was saying, come on, Steve, the 808 is basically just doing the same thing the N95 did 6 years ago. And I'm saying, do you know, that's hit the nail on the head. It is. It's exactly the same sort of feeling as I felt as I first held the N95 in my hand. The ultimate converged device then, and now the 808 is kind of the ultimate converged device in 2012. Yes, there are things we've been through, the areas in which Android and iOS are superior. But if you want something, one little box in your hand, it does the sheer maximum number of features and does them all incredibly well in terms of, you know, photography and multimedia. And even some of the applications, things like Gravity, and they really, really, really slick and smooth. And yes, the 808 in that sense is a bit like an N95 updated 6 years later with bigger screen, bigger processor, better everything, amplified to the max, multiplied by 10.
Yeah, I mean, at the same time, I think it's fair to say, you know, the smartphone world has changed. You know, the goalposts, if you like, have moved. But when goalposts move, there's still people who want to shoot at the other target, basically because that's what they want. I think it's perhaps fair to say the majority of the market has kind of maybe moved on from that purely convergence-driven approach, which is, I think, you know, where Nokia did so well in, you know, building the first smartphones. And whatever anyone else might say, I still think Nokia were the company that kind of, you know, built the first smartphone and created that market. You know, Apple did then come along and maybe rewrite the game a little bit. And I think the story of Nokia in recent years has been kind of the struggle to respond to that while not alienating their existing customers. And no doubt they've made some missteps. We've talked about that loads of times on the podcast. But I guess, Steve, that does kind of lead to the inevitable question. If you could get the 808's camera in something like, you know, a Lumia 800, and obviously we have to assume some design changes, plus it's running Windows Phone 8, which we know fills quite a lot of the gaps. Would you be interested in that device, sort of consider it using that instead of the Symbian version and the 808? And I guess the same would apply to, you know, if that was available on an Android device. What would your kind of response to that be?
Yes, I would seriously consider it. Every time I pull up one of my comparison tables, my infamous comparison tables between something like a Nokia 808 and some of the competition, people always point out quite rightly that a good half, if not two-thirds, of the wins and the positives I put in the 808's column are actually down to Nokia's hardware and not to anything to do with Symbian. So although I've been a fan of Symbian in the past, a lot of that has kind of been tied hand-in-hand with the Nokia's hardware innovations and the components and the quality of the build and so forth all the way along the line. So absolutely, I'm not completely irrevocably a Symbian fanboy till the day I die. I am a fan of decent hardware with decent components that does a really, really high quality job in certain areas. And yes, photography is one of those areas. Multimedia is another. Having a great speaker is another. Being able to play some good games. I mean, not quite so good there, but there's still some pretty good games out there. So yeah, looking around my 808, there are some fabulous applications. I mean, things like WhatsApp, things like even the Nokia trailers, pulling in the very latest movie trailers with Dolby Digital Sound. And what to me is pretty high resolution graphics and frame rates and so forth. Gorgeous colors on the 808 screen. There's an awful lot I can do. I did say in the review part, Rafe, that I absolutely understand if someone's priority is browsing, you know, full-fledged, full desktop design websites, if someone's priority is having an application for every bank, every service, every shop, if someone's priority is a fabulous 3D render games, then yes, iOS and Android, absolutely go down that route. But if someone wants really high quality hardware and some pretty decent software in some areas, then I think the 808 has a lot going for it.
Yeah, I think that's probably a message we've repeated many times over the years. And I mean, I would agree with you. you know, part of the attraction to the Symbian device has always been the Nokia hardware. Now, other manufacturers make great hardware. I think, you know, the iPhone in one sense stands out, although even there, I think there's some, you know, interesting design decisions, you know, the glass on the front and back of the iPhone 4, for example, in terms of the, you know, the survivability of dropping it. I still think you can't beat Nokia devices, which is why, you know, it's interesting to see Nokia has, you know, come across, you know, really difficult times. We're due for their quarterly results later this week. They're not expected to be good by any means. They're probably going to lose a whole lot more money. It'd be interesting to see what the sales numbers say. But, you know, I think a lot of their problem has been, you know, perception created a certain amount of problems, and then, you know, the goalposts, as I say, of what people expect from smartphones has moved. But that doesn't mean, you know, that these devices aren't in some ways extremely capable. And I think the 808 is unusual for a smartphone on the market at the moment, as it's got certain points where it is so far ahead of its competition. You know, it's, you know, it's difficult to express, you know, never mind when we're showing you the, you know, image samples, it's much harder on audio. And it's difficult to think of another smartphone that, you know, has one area where it stands out so much more from the competition. So that's why I still, you know, have a certain amount of optimism about Nokia hardware in general going forward. But I guess we should probably try and move on to talk about something other than the 808, shouldn't we, Steve?
Well, I wanted to hit you with one last point. Just
okay.
The Amazon UK sales program for the 808 is currently on sale at 520 on Amazon, if you want the black one, 485 if you want the white. I thought white was supposed to be the expensive premium version. We've got it the other way around this time.
Oh, well, I don't know why it's the £35 cheaper on Amazon UK. It's not the first time I've seen this happen. I guess sometimes it comes from a different stockist, or, you know, they get the pricing in from the wholesalers slightly different. It probably is worth saying that Amazon UK is actually the only official place where you can get a UK-branded Nokia 808. I have noticed it's available on a few other third-party retailers as well. But I guess £480 isn't a bad price for the 808, maybe a little more expensive than I'll be comfortable paying in reality. But if you want, you know, the best camera phone on the market, I guess you have to get your wallet out and put down the spondoolies.
Yes, and like I say, this is a classic phone that you will keep for years. There are loads of people out there who've still kept their N82s, N95s, even N96s in some cases. No, let's not go there. N86, and of course the N8 itself was an absolute classic, and I can't imagine any N8 owner actually going off and giving away or selling their N8. They're going to keep it in a drawer, even when they get the 808, because they are classic phones, and the US still just as usable in terms of a camera phone and as a multimedia smartphone 5 years after the event. So yeah, absolutely, these things are, you pay a certain premium, but this device is going to last you for year after year after year, in theory. But yes, let's move off the 808 before people get totally bored, I think, with the 808 podcast. Nokia Situations, which was a Beta Labs project, basically auto-sensing where you are when your phone is in time and space and applying certain profiles, certain actions, that was kind of taken off the market by Beta Labs, but had been taken up by a third party, Rafe, and you've got the details. It's now just called Situations.
That's right. This is actually fairly similar to what happened with Sports Tracker, which was another application that kind of came out of Nokia Research and Development. And Situations has actually been spun out by a company called Pastili Labs. It's actually been founded by two of the core members of the Nokia Situations team. So, you know, they've left Nokia. I would imagine this is part of the Nokia Bridge program, which is what they put employees through to give them extra support when they leave the company. And there's been a lot of that recently with all the job losses going on at Nokia. But this caught my eye because I think Situations is one of the most underrated smartphone apps anyway. I think it's one of the very best examples of how you can use a smartphone to do really intelligent things, and it kind of puts smart into the smartphone. For those that aren't familiar with it, effectively what it does is it takes certain situations and you can set up conditions that define those situations. They can be time, they can be something from your calendar, so you can say if there's something in your calendar, that is one situation, but also around connectivity, whether you've got Wi-Fi present or Bluetooth, and also around a location. And once you've got those situations and you can combine any of those together in sort of any way you like, you can then get the phone to do a certain thing. Now, that might be changing a profile, switching mobile data, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth on and off, something like that. It can be putting the phone into power save mode. It could be, you know, letting the phone reply by SMS when someone calls you. So, for example, that'd be great when you're in a meeting. You can also launch specific applications or bookmarks. And so, you know, it's really flexible. It's kind of giving your phone this semi-autonomous intelligence that it does certain things in certain situations. Now, for example, I use this so that when I go to my local cinema, it automatically launches the Internet Movie Database website. It also switches my phone to silent and puts it into power save mode, because I'm not going to be doing anything with the phone apart from maybe looking on the Internet Movie Database website. So it's that kind of, you know, clever thing that you can set up. I think more commonly people may use it to automatically put their phone into silent when they're in a meeting, or maybe, you know, to switch on Wi-Fi when they get to the office or get to home where they know there's a Wi-Fi network present. You know, all about, you know, doing power saving, but just, you know, doing useful things. So I was really, really pleased to see this being spun out. You know, it's available for all the Nokia Bell devices, so things like the 808, 701, 700, 603, as well as all the original kind of Symbian 3 devices, the NAE7, C7, 500, etc. It's actually been updated quite significantly since it was available in Beta Labs. There's a new user interface that's kind of based around that Bell widgets, you know, Qt smart components, that kind of thing. It makes it a lot easier to use, and I think it's more intuitive to set up the situation. Before, it required a certain amount of technical know-how, if you like. And, you know, for example, for locations, rather than relying on bookmarks, you can actually choose a location on the map. So all that kind of thing is making for a friendlier user experience. They've also updated some of the situations so that it's essentially it's more stable and it's sort of better performing under certain situations. When it was in Beta Labs, I think it was fair to say it was a beta product. I haven't been using it for very long so far, but it does feel like a much more stable product. It's available from the Nokia store. It does cost €1 or £1, but I think for an application that, you know, adds so much intelligence to the phone, I think it's an absolute steal at that price, because there are very, very few applications which genuinely add new features to the phone, and you know, which feel like core features, and I think Situation does. So thumbs up from me, and thoroughly recommend you go and download it now if you've got a Symbian Bell device.
And you're doing a write-up for the site, which should be up by about the same time.
It will be up by the time people are listening to this, yes.
Okay. Also on the site, just as a mention, there's a bit of a tip in the Symbian world. Most people have a Symbian, perhaps Bell smartphone, or upgraded to Bell, and they use the version of Nokia Store that came with it or came with that firmware. What people may not realize is if you go to Nokia Beta Labs, again, the place to go, the latest version of the, quote, QML Store usually contains a version of the Nokia Store that's two or three versions on from that version they're using. It may have bug fixes, maybe faster performance, and so forth. And in this case, there's a new, brand new version 3.3 that's been released, all sorts of bug fixes. And so grab it, if nothing else, for that. But also, you can, for example, just grab the SIS file and keep it on your hard disk. Just, it's wonderful, because it includes all the relevant Qt components, so that if ever Qt gets messed up on your Symbian smartphone, no problem. Zap on the very latest version of the QML store, and not only have you got the latest store, you've got all the latest Qt bits and pieces, and all of a sudden Qt works again. It's worked time after time after time to rescue people sending Symbian smartphones that are a bit bricked, Rafe, and I put on the latest firmware, and this store doesn't work, and this doesn't work, no problem. I download the SIS file for the QML store from Beta Labs, and hey presto, everything's tickety-boo again. So it's a big, big tip from me, and say version 3.3 is now at betalabs.nokia.com. So yeah, make sure you're bang up to date, and of course at some point Nokia will release one of these things as an official update to the official client. But in the meantime, stay beta, stay happy, stay...
That's an excellent tip, although I sort of grimace slightly. That sort of thing is still messy with, you know, Qt sometimes going wrong. I guess that kind of speaks to one of the issues that Symbian's had with all its legacy bits and pieces and having Qt effectively grafted on top. But yes, I've used that same trick myself to kind of fix everything. And actually, the performance of the beta versions of the Nokia Store a significant improvement, certainly over some of the earlier versions. It depends what version you've got on your phone, but to the point where actually installing and browsing for applications really is quite a decent experience, which is great, because as you said earlier, there are some very, very good applications still available for Symbian, and new ones coming out all the time. And we've been featuring a couple of them, both in the Flow section and some of the reviews we've been writing recently on the site.
Now, I should emphasize that me in possession of lots of broken Symbian phones is not a reflection of the quality of the software, but the fact that A, I'm very good at breaking things, and B, most of the geeks who follow me and liaise with me are also very good at breaking things. And I also have all sorts of bricked and faulty Android devices as well, and they're just as liable to go wrong in beta stroke hacker stroke geek hands, and nothing to do with Black and Decker drills either. This is purely software.
I have to say I'm suspicious about what you do to phones, because you do seem to have a tendency to break them about 5 seconds after starting them, and it usually takes me a lot longer before I can crash a smartphone than it does for you.
What can I say? It's a natural talent. We're kind of out of time, Rafe. Sorry, apologies to people listening for all the gushing earlier. I'm still in love with this 808, you know. We'll have to leave you there and hope I don't go on about it too much next week. But in the meantime, it's a goodbye from Rafe Manford.
Goodbye, everybody. And I guess I'll start gushing when I get my hands on an 808 for a long-term period rather than just a quick play.
It's only a matter of time. And goodbye from me as well. AllAboutSymbian.com. Catch us at AAS on Twitter and AllAboutSymbian on Facebook. Bye for now.